Won't even have you open your committee. Okay.
I'd like to open the Senate Committee on Health Policy and Public Affairs on this beautiful day of March 26, 2007. Before we enter into the informational meeting, I would like to open a work session on SCR 12.
Madam Chair, I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on SCR 12.
Senator Gourley moves the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on SCR 12. And we pass SCR 12 to the floor on 319. And since that meeting, we have received some more information that we want to add to the resolution. Are there any objections to Senator Gourley's motion to suspend the rules? If not, so ordered.
Madam Chair, having voted on the prevailing side, I move we reconsider the vote by which we passed SCR 12.
Senator Gourley moves we reconsider the vote by which we passed SCR 12. Are there any objections?
No.
If not, so ordered. And is that now, should we?
No, you need to move the dash
one. Okay. You have the dash one.
Yes. Madam Chair, I move the dash one amendments to SCR 12.
Senator Gourley moves the dash one amendments to SCR 12. Is there any objections? So ordered.
And Madam Chair, I move SCR 12 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Gourley moves SCR 12 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Are there any discussion? Any objections? So ordered.
I'd like to open.
Oh, and Senator Gourley was carrying that. Yes.
I'd like to open the House Committee on Human Services and Women's Wellness on March 26, 2007.
And we have an informational meeting, and Bob Nickel, from the who's Assistant Director of Addictions and Mental Health, please come forward.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bob Nickel, Assistant Director of the Department of Human Services, and I'm responsible for the Addictions and Mental Health Division. I'm going to get out of your way relatively quickly here because we have a number of people who are going to be here to tell you information that I could only do secondhand. I would tell you that the list is a little bit longer than we might all like, and they've all been coached to be very succinct and clear in their testimony. I will also tell you that two things they have in common. They're all doing creative, good things. And the second thing is none of them are really sure where the funding is coming from next. So that's partly a matter of where we are in the legislative session. But these are creative programs, and I think any time you do creative things, it's not always clear for a while whether it's really established on an ongoing basis. So I would just ask you to hold that in your mind so they don't have to plead for funding. Some of them may make comments about that, but I just want to acknowledge the difficulty in funding things the last number of years through real difficult times in Oregon. I'm confident that this session will end up being better and make funding and these kinds of programs more stable than they have been. I believe the latest list for testimony arrived probably late on Friday, and I'm not sure that I have that, and I will just defer at this point, I think, to the co-chairs to begin calling people up, and if we need to work a little bit behind the scenes on the side here to make sure that everybody has a chance to be recognized, we'll do that.
Okay, right now I will be following what's on the agenda, so if there is anything different from this agenda. Okay, should I go ahead and start?
Yeah, go ahead and
with
start
the Consumer Council. Okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
We'll start with the Consumer Council. Do you have anything
have
different?
Okay.
And that's Crusita White.
Good morning, Chair Senator Manoys Anderson.
Manoys Anderson.
Manoys, excuse me, please, and chair members, or committee members. I'm a little nervous. I'm here to testify on behalf of the Oregon Consumer Survivor Council, and it originally started, formed in June 2003 at the request of Bob Nickel, Assistant Director of Department of Human Services. The first meeting was held in late June 2003. We had major topics that were discussed that the council were very concerned about. One was the health, mental health courts, and Leola McKenzie from the Attorney General's Office attended a meeting on April 13, 2005, where consumer survivors expressed their concerns of certain things, for instance, forcings of medications on court clients. Also, whether or not the attorneys represented all the court clients, with expressed concerns of how well the clients were being represented by attorneys appointed by the mental health courts. The council also expressed concerns that representatives mental health courts may not represent the consumer survivors very well. The council also expressed that there was an apparent lack of oversight of the professionals that do provide care in accordance to the court-mandated treatment. So the summary of this is that there was discussion on this topic, informed the Attorney General's Office of Consumer Survivor Concerns regarding mental health courts, and allowed the Attorney General's Office an opportunity to explain how those concerns are being addressed. The second thing that we were very concerned about is public standards and training curriculum. Norm Clark attended an April 13th meeting in 2005, and he gained perspective of consumer survivors regarding police training on mental health issues. And we had several concerns about training that focuses on mental health issues is not nearly long enough. Recommended increased simulations of scenarios involving persons with severe mental health systems from 4 to 8 hours. The current 3-hour required crisis intervention training is not nearly enough. Not enough training is provided using non-lethal force. The council informed Norm Clark of consumer-run drop-in centers as a resource to take people instead of jail. Another thing that we were very concerned about is the Oregon State Hospital Master Plan, Phase 1, 5-1305, Phase 2, 12-1405. And we had the Master Plan Project Manager, KMD Architects, and Tom Gross from the Master Plan Senior Medical Mental Health Planner. They attended the April 13, 2005 meeting, and it was to gain perspective of council members on the Oregon State Hospital Master Plan. And the concerns of the council members included, if there are more hospital beds, they will be filled. More beds is not the answer. The inclusion of places for exercise and relaxation. Having places where patients can do their own cooking and develop independent living skills. Having places for individual privacy. Having sanctuary rooms or quiet places to go. The need to create a system that has a flow where people quickly move on to be more integrated in the community, spend less time in hospitals, and restrictive facilities is important. Having the patients having freedom to roam the campus, having a consumer-run center or drop-in center on campus. The next one was about medications and the harmful side effects. February 2005, the council prepared a letter addressed to Dr. Pollock, David Pollock, AMH Medical Director. During the April 13, 2005 meeting, Dr. Pollock responded to the letter, and we expressed the lack of satisfaction with the response, stating it did not go far enough to ensure the safety of patients at Oregon State Hospital and other state institutions. The harmful side effects noted the council are excessive weight gain, diabetes, heart disease. And during these three meetings of the council during 2006, strategies to work toward the establishment of a statewide consumer survivor network was developed. This network would have the following objectives: to provide an effective means for consumer-run organizations throughout the state to share ideas and provide support and technical assistance to each other. Provide an effective means for consumer survivors throughout the state to provide each other mutual support. Provide an effective means for consumer survivors to learn about consumer survivor advancements in various parts of the state, and to provide an effective means for consumer survivors to collectively work together towards informing the local and state mental health system on mental health service delivery and policy. And there were also letters that were directed to the editors of the Oregonian and Public Tribune regarding James Chassie's death as the result of what was the opinion of the council unnecessary police aggression. The letter was not printed by either publications. The letter to the editors regarding issues of paramount importance to the council will continue to be submitted by the council. Another thing that we are very concerned about is peer-to-peer service delivery, the training, certification, and funding, Medicaid billing for consumer-operated services, trauma policy, establishment of Consumer Survivor Statewide Conference came about during December 2005 and April 2006. Meetings were held in regards to that. We had a meeting with Bruce Goldberg, DHS director, on December 14, 2005 and February 8, 2006. And the police training, we had a meeting in regards to police training on October 2005. Community mental health programs and MHO sites review. We reviewed that and discussed it on November 2003 and February 2004. And I'd like to also respond to the update to the best of my knowledge. As far as the mental health courts, we currently do, as we requested and wanted, have a consumer serving on the mental health courts task force. Also, people have been involved with the police standards and training curriculum, including getting involved with the CIT trainings. I personally did get involved.
CIT is what?
Crisis Intervention Team Training, I'm sorry. I did personally get involved to an extent that was allowed by the Portland Police with part of that training. Not directly involved, but to help with the training film. And Salem also has that in place with Marion County Sheriff Department, the Crisis Intervention Team Training. The Oregon State Hospital Master Plan, we do have that in place, and several people have provided consumer survivor concerns, requests, and participation from consumer survivor community. I lost my thought. And medication is always a big one. So in reference to that, all I can say is that we're consistently working on this. We still do meet, and it has increased. The participation from consumer survivors has increased tremendously. In the last few months, we have even had committed consumers from the state hospital attend some of the meetings to also be integrated in the community and to see what is going on and have their input prior to being released from the hospital. I thank you for this time, and if there's any questions, I will do the best I can to answer.
Thank you so much for your testimony. You've sort of tweaked my curiosity regarding, now that we have a master plan, and this is probably directed to Mr. Nickel. You have cited several issues, and I would hope that in the building of the actual psychiatric hospitals, that it is based, going to be built with evidence-based treatment in mind. You were stating the facilities, whether it's a solitary room or a library or those types of things. So mm-hmm. I see the nods going up and down like that. And then how is the crisis intervention training, in your perspective, going with the police force?
Well, personally, like it was brought up in the meetings, that we would like to see more training done. And I believe that, you know, the scenarios of practice with the police in a safe environment of severely mental health consumers, you know, as a practice of role-playing, for lack of better terms right now, would be very beneficial, because I do understand that, you know, police are trained to keep people safe, but it is so hard to recognize, for various reasons, people that have mental health issues. Whether myself, I have experienced medication transitions that was very difficult. I was not acting my normal self, and that was based upon I needed my medications adjusted. Also, when you have a episode, you have a tendency, sometimes you're not thinking clearly, you're responding differently, you have a tendency to be afraid. Myself, being from the African-American population, sometimes we are afraid of the police, that we are going to be arrested for things that we may not have done. We don't know why we are being aggressively approached. It would be beneficial for the police to go and visit drop-in centers and get more involved to make people, consumers with mental health, understand that we are here to help, and it could be a partnership for the safety of all people. So that is my opinion in regards to that. So I would like, or we would like to see more more involvement from consumers themselves in the actual training. The one in Portland I attended, we did some filming, but we did not have actual contact for even questions or answers or giving our personal testimony as to experiences and how we felt and how we dealt with it and what we needed. This is very important because when someone is going through an episode, you don't know. Sometimes they don't even know. And just to be comforted that you care about us and that you really do want to help us and that there are alternatives to jail or hospitalization, it should be appropriate for that period of time. And with peers, support is very important for that. I personally would like to see crisis intervention team. I know Portland has in place for other issues. I'm not sure if they have it for the mental health, but that would be very beneficial for Salem, Portland, and the whole area.
That's something that I've been doing some reading in this area, and I'm very interested in the crisis intervention team. Senator Gordley.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Ms. White, and thank you for providing excellent testimony, and would request that we have a copy of your testimony. Have you been involved or been invited to be involved with the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training and in the design and development of the crisis intervention training that's taking place there?
No, I have not. I'd be very interested, and there's other consumers as well that would be very interested, and we have a lot to offer.
That's something that I would encourage and would look forward to working with you and others to make that connection happen with the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. The other thing that I'll promise you is that your testimony today will also be made available to Chief Sizer in Portland and to the Chiefs Forum, which is a citizens advisory group to the chief and to the bureau. I think the testimony that you've provided today will be very helpful to their efforts in Portland. And again, just thank you for being a participant with us this morning.
So staff, if you could get that, and then you know, when you're ready, and then we will make sure that it gets to the Public Safety and Training Department. Thank
you. May I add another thing that I just remembered that I should have put in here is that progress has been made also for the transition of patients coming out of the state hospital to be supported by peer support during that transition. We're looking at a model to be trained, the consumers trained to go in and make contact with the patients while they're in, I almost said incarcerated, that's another program we're looking at. Oops. But while they're in, you know, in the hospital and being hospitalized, so that they do have a comfort zone within that and the transition and to receive services in the community and hopefully be accepted in the community much better.
Thank you very much. Any other discussion?
I should add one thing, and that is that the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training has requested to make a presentation to our Mental Health Caucus about the crisis intervention training that they're currently developing. So
great news.
We'll make that connection.
Thank you. All right. I know Senator Carter had to leave, and I know that Senator Courtney needs to leave. All right. I have a little timer here, and so thank you very much, Ms. White.
Thank you.
And so if you get too long, I'm going to just sort of hold it up like this, and you'll get the message. Jim Russell, Executive Director of the Mid-Valley Behavioral Care Network. And Young.
Good morning, Chairman Sanderson and Tomei, members of the committee, the joint committees. I'm grateful that you both have chosen to come together this morning to hear some of the things that are going to be said. I'm joined here by Beth, who's been a participant in the EAST program we're going to talk about, and also by Tamara Sale, who's been the project for half a dozen years. This EAST is the Early Assessment and Support Team. It's an early intervention program for psychosis that occurs with schizophrenia and bipolar disorder. The governor's recommended budget provides $4.3 million to bring EAST throughout Oregon. We've been able to finance it over the 6 years because Tamara is a gifted grant writer, and we've gained more than $1 million from private foundations. Many people are not eligible for insurance. This won't be possible if we don't provide some state general fund to make it happen. A number of you have read about this in the Community Services Work Group report. The information I have so far is it isn't funded in the co-chair's budget, but I may not know the details on that. Investing in early psychosis intervention means the difference between devastation and a lifelong disability, or staying on track with life. And I think you'll be able to hear partly in Beth's story and in my comments after her story, you'll be able to hear that contrast, and I'll make reference to the materials that were just passed out. We've chosen this model. It's based on research that was done in Australia. It's a common practice model in England and Canada. When we started 6 years ago, we were the only community program in the United States doing it. A few others are starting to pick it up. It is being researched around the United States, but it's not in community practice. So, Beth, I wonder if you'd be willing to share.
My name is Beth Hogerhues. I live in Kaiser. I remember one of my episodes, I was hearing demonic voices and having visual hallucinations. I was seeing things coming out of my bedroom mirror. When my bed had space under it, I would see monster-like things under it. I would run and dive into my bed and hide under my covers, scared to death, hoping they would not attack me. During that time, some of my family thought I was on drugs, which was not the reason for my crazy behavior. Psychosis was the reason for my wacko behavior. Finally, things in my life had gotten to a point where things were so out of control, I signed into the psychiatric unit in the Salem Hospital. During treatment, the hospital connected me with the EAST program. I was later diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder. At first, it was hard to deal with, but my counselor, Nina, showed me how to work with my illness in a very positive way. She has also taught me how to catch my early symptoms and how to take care of them. This program has helped me and my family manage my disorder. I am now at the end of the EAST program. They are helping me start college with a goal of experiencing a new beginning in life. I am very excited. After I get through college, I hope to provide help to people like me. I want to help them regain control of their lives as a way of showing my appreciation to those who have helped me. I am so thankful for this program. Now I can live a near normal life.
Thank you. Beth, I have a question for you. How old were you when you developed psychosis?
16.
16. And how long have you been in the EAST program?
Since I was 25. I lived out in the country, so they didn't really have anything to help me. And a lot of people, they would just say, Beth's being Beth. They didn't really think there was too much wrong with me, even though there was a lot going on. They thought I was on drugs. There was many things.
So you had psychosis from the time you were 16 until you were 25, and then until you were sent to the EAST program.
Yeah, I still do have off and on symptoms, but they've taught me how to manage them and how much medication.
And you are on medication.
Yes, I can't go without it.
Okay, and how old are you now, Beth?
I am 26. I'll be 27 in April.
Okay, so you were in the program for about a year?
Almost 2 years.
2 years, okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you came.
Thank you. Is there any other questions? Okay.
Thank you, Beth. I do know that some of the members are well acquainted with serious mental illness, but I did appreciate you asking the questions, Chair Cummings. With reference to some of the material, I don't see the timer in the air yet, but I'm planning on whizzing along. this trifold brochure the front of it is a picture of the truth of the matter that we're facing here. In our 6 years of experience, about 70% of the people we worked with rapidly get their lives back on course. And it continues to be an issue like Beth just mentioned. It's like managing diabetes or something. It's not like you stop being diabetic. There are things that you need to do. It's still part of your life, but she has a life. Untreated, and with just the traditional services available, the majority of the people have major disruption the rest of their life at a cost of millions of dollars. They go on disability insurance and take up a career, as I've been saying for 20 years, as a mental health patient, and it's a tragedy that is unfair for us. I'm so grateful that Oregon has in front of them the opportunity to make some change in this. So if you'll open up the trifold on the left-hand side, you can appreciate that in young adulthood, there are these critical developmental tasks. There are these things that you have to do about getting a life established. An episode of psychosis can throw this all off track and set up this career as a mental health patient, but it doesn't have to. That's an optional disability. Yet in the middle and the right-hand side of the inside of the trifold, you can see a side-by-side comparison of what it's like. And on the right-hand side, you can see kind of an amalgam of the experience we've had of people resuming the life that they and their families dreamed for them. This takes community outreach, really educating the schools and physicians, the people who are likely to first notice what's going on with Beth. You heard her say, people just figured it was drugs or something else. People didn't tune in, didn't get her the treatment that she needed. Beth is a rarer success story where something can progress like that. Typically, you start burning up your network. You lose your family connection. You've lost your job, dropped out of school. And it's very hard to resume the kind of life that we would want for people. Now, at the front of the brochure, it says 1 out of 100 developed schizophrenia. About the same number will develop bipolar disorder with psychosis. And so 1 out of 50 of your constituents, your young constituents, are facing this health predicament. And this is smart money. This is millions of dollars that we will spend on people if they take up a life course of disability. And probably $8,000 to $10,000 a year for a couple of years if we make an investment up front.
Representative Gelser?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair. In the intervention process for people early on, and you talked about reaching out to the schools and educators and other partners, what kinds of efforts are being made to reach out and provide services and supports to family members of those who are experiencing mental illness? We heard testimony in another committee the other day from the younger sibling of a man who experienced schizophrenia, and he talked about the impact on his childhood, both in terms of his concern for his brother and that very real impact it had on his well-being as well. Is that part of this program?
You know,
are there other services available?
Excuse me. Chairman Sanderson, Chair Committee, Representative Gelser. I was just realizing that that's a centerpiece of this program and that I'd missed it. As I'm cataloging in my mind, okay, well, I got off track. How much have I left out? It is the families. It's working with the families. Often that's our initial point of contact, and in some cases our only point of contact for helping them understand what's going on. A central piece of this is an evidence-based practice called multifamily group. We bring the families together, partly in an educational format, but partly in a peer support format. And as you know from your work with other disabilities, the impact on other members of the family is very serious. It can set their lives on a whole new course. And so that's a critical part of this intervention.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. Okay.
Thank you for the
opportunity. You bet. Thank you.
The one last piece I left out is a request that you would allow us to come talk to you individually in the next couple of weeks, so before you're making decisions about where the money goes, that you're making it with a full understanding of what we're offering here.
And Margaret Carter is the chair of the Health Committee.
and she has left. So that's the Ways and Means Subcommittee on Health. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'd like to call up the East Program Representative, and I'm not sure who that is.
They just
oh, that's you. They have.
Although I'd be interested in
learning
more.
Okay, and Jim Russell. That's okay.
Madam Chair, I would like to say that as a member of the Human Services Subcommittee, I'll carry the message forward, understanding that this is the only program of its kind in the state, and this is about early intervention.
Okay. Thank you. Mitch Anderson, Mental Health Director for Benton County, is going to describe the roles of local mental health authorities and mental health organizations, and he'll also describe the Children's System Change Initiative, about 10 minutes worth. If you can do all of that in 10 minutes.
Yeah, I think somebody got it out for me here.
Chair Moniz Anderson, Chair Tomei, members of the committee, my name is Mitchell Anderson. I'm the mental health director for Benton County, Oregon, and I live in Corvallis, Oregon. Thank you for allowing me to speak this morning. In terms of our mental health system, I think oftentimes people are very confused about the different roles of different entities, and I wanted to try and offer a little guidance around the difference between the local mental health authority and the mental health organizations and the unique roles that each of those entities has. I provided a packet of information. It's in a blue notebook, and right now the first document in there that is on the Benton County letterhead is what I'm going to be going over. The local mental health authority is established through ORS 430, and it directs counties and establishes counties and regions and tribes as the local mental health authority. That role is a quite broad role, and if you look at the bottom of page one of the document I provided, there's really kind of two broad functions. One of those is planning. The counties are to provide a local planning process and a biennial plan for mental health services. That plan is inclusive of mental health services, addiction services, and developmental disability services. The second bullet under there, B, for me, the first item is the one that I focus on most with the local mental health authority, that the purpose of a community mental health program is to provide a system of appropriate, accessible, coordinated, effective, and efficient services to meet the mental health needs of the citizens of the community. One of the important things about that charge is it's not specific to folks without insurance, folks with insurance, or folks on an Oregon health plan. It's really for all the citizens of the community. So really, the local mental health authority, who is the county commissioners and the designated mental health director, have this charge to really assure that there's a system of services across the community for all members. We tend to focus more on those individuals without insurance and those on Oregon Health Plan, the publicly funded clients, because that's where a big chunk of our funding comes. But really, it's in our purview to look at that whole system and make sure there's access and services for everyone. And that's a pretty tall order. It's very difficult to get some data across some of the private systems, but see it as an essential role. The importance of that local mental health authority is really that it allows for this local planning process with citizen involvement, looking at the different private providers in the community, the different partners in the community, and really pulling all of that together into a system of care. And I think it's something that's most easily done on a very local basis, where you can build the partnerships, the friendships, the cooperation needed to really look at the specific needs of your community. In bold, I had said local authority means local design and control. A community-based system of services built upon citizen input, local investment, stakeholder collaboration, and ideally, blended, braided resources to meet the unique needs of the individual and the community. Planning, partnering, and producing outcomes. So for me, it's really this focus on how do we use all the resources in our community to build a system that works for all of our citizens and meets their needs. Now, in talking of the mental health organizations, those organizations really came together first and foremost, to manage the risk of the Oregon Health Plan. One of the more simple ways to describe them is they're more like an insurance company. They're not as much a provider of services. They're an organizer and a facilitator of a network of services. The Oregon Health Plan and the funding for that, for mental health services, is what's called a capitated system. So there's a finite amount of dollars that come out, and for that, the mental health organization is responsible to provide the mental health for the mental health needs of all those members, regardless of what those needs are. So there's an inherent risk in that, that if needs are very high and costs are high, you still have to provide for that, even if your money is capped. So it provides an incentive for the organization to work towards providing proactive preventative services. Now, the mental health organizations, the majority of them in Oregon are public organizations, and they are either an arm of a county in large counties, or they're a banding together of several smaller counties, and that's to bring together enough covered lives and enough finance to manage that risk. The strength that comes out of that is because that organization is really responsible for seeing that there's a quality system that contains costs and gets all the needs met of the members. It drives the counties involved to provide good quality services. There's an accountability back to the mental health organization, but at the same time, the local mental health authorities in their local planning can drive how the MHO configures itself. And so you get this interplay back and forth. The MHO focuses on its utilization and its data across the region, but that data can be split out by the individual counties involved, and you can compare and contrast what's working and what isn't working in local.
I have
entities.
A question here.
Yes.
And I'm familiar with Clackamas County. So
mm-hmm.
Clackamas County Mental Health Department is the mental health authority.
Right.
What is the mental health organization in Clackamas County?
Clackamas County, Chair.
And maybe it's different in each county.
Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee, the organizations are different around the state. With some of the larger counties like Clackamas, they became their own mental health organization. And so there's an arm within their structure that manages that utilization and looks at the Oregon Health Plan, and then there's still a separate local mental health authority. It's more like a division within their whole health program. In the smaller counties who didn't have enough covered lives to manage the risk, several counties banded together and created that arm. Okay. In both circumstances, the mental health organization creates an efficiency in that it focuses staffing and resource on the quality improvement, the monitoring of utilization and things that help the whole service delivery, although it only focuses on the Oregon Health Plan clients.
And do we have a grid that shows which counties are mental health authorities and where the mental health organizations are?
There has been a map. I didn't bring a copy of that, that's color-coded, that shows where the mental health authorities. We can get that for you.
Thank you.
To me, I think what's really important is the interplay you get between the mental health organization, which is focusing on this open access service for Oregon Health Plan clients, and the county mental health authority, who's looking broadly at the whole service array for the population. And as the mental health authority challenges, as the MHO challenges the local mental health authority to provide better access for Oregon health plans, it also challenges the local mental health authority to become more efficient in providing for that population and taking those technologies and providing them for the general population. So you get a good, strong interplay there. The other piece is the local mental health authority, through its planning process, has a lot more detailed sense of what the whole community needs and how the OHP services fit within that, and can feed that planning information to the mental health organization in terms of better refining the Oregon Health Plan services. What I did to give an example of that, I was trying to think of a way to describe, you know, how does this, what's the value added, how does this work? And so the other two documents were my attempt to do that, and I'm not going to put them in detail, but they're here as an illustration. The first is a loose leaf document in your packet with ABHA in the corner. Accountable Behavioral Health Alliance is the mental health organization that Benton County is a member of. And with this Children's Systems Change Initiative, which has been an initiative to take what were residential and day treatment dollars, move those to the mental health organizations, again, as a risk-based payment, and say provide an array of services for kids and families. So the mental health organizations took on that risk. And they then pushed down to their county members, okay, we have to build these new service systems for kids and families. So the role that the mental health organization plays is to look at data across the counties, collect data about what's going on and how are the local efforts working in that. So this first document is some outcome information from ABHA that comes back to the counties to say this is what family members are saying, this is how the system is working. We can then take that information and further refine our programs locally. So there's work going on that way through the MHOs. On the other end, the community is working. And with the Kids Systems Change Initiative, there was a huge amount of need for the communities to band together under the local mental health authority and build from the ground up a new array of services. And so the notebook that I provided you was an example of that work on the local community and through the local mental health authority. That notebook was put together by a group of parents in Benton County with our help who wanted to create a guide for families about what mental health services were available in the community and how to access those, along with some real helpful tips for parents and family members to use in terms of accessing those services and helping their children with mental health issues. So we're working as a local mental health authority to build that groundswell of citizen involvement and create something that improves and defines our system of care for kids, while at the same time the mental health organization is looking at data across this region, collecting what's working, looking at access data, and feeding that back to the counties to say your efforts are or are not working. So I'm hoping that gives you a little sense of that interplay between the two organizations, and I'd invite you to look through those documents, and you'll get a sense of the richness of the planning and work that's going on.
This is a great book, and you provide this for everybody who comes in seeking services or...
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, we provide that not only for people coming in to seek services, but we provide it to any member in Benton County who would like one. So.
This is terrific. Very, very good.
And where are you actually located? Where is your building?
Our building's located in Corvallis.
Okay. And you cover what area then? All of Benton County?
ABA, the local mental health authority is Benton County. Accountable Behavioral Health Alliance covers a 5-county region. It's Deschutes County, Crook, Jefferson County, Benton County, and Lincoln County.
So if you're in Deschutes County and you have someone that should be taken care of, how do they know where to go?
Deschutes County, they would approach the local mental health authority in Deschutes County, or they could call Accountable Behavioral Health Alliance if they have Oregon Health Plan, and they would have the information both locally for Deschutes County but also the information across our region.
And do all psychiatrists and physicians know how their mental health system works in each county so that appropriate referrals are made?
Chair Monis Anderson, Chair Tomei, members of the committee, I can't say that all do. We work very hard to get the information out. I think getting information into the medical system has been somewhat difficult, and providing that regularly, we do our best. All of the counties through the local mental health authority have a phone number that can be called. ABHA has a newsletter that goes out so that people know who to call to get that information if they don't know.
So I think this is one of our problems. When you say 1 out of 100 have schizophrenia, 1 out of 100 have bipolar, I think there are a lot of parents out there that truly do not know where to go. And so the more that we can do to make this common talk among physicians and schools and counselors, the better.
Yes, Chair Monis Anderson, when we created this handbook with families, one of the great things was it pulled a number of families together in the community, and they advise us about where and how to get information out. We actually sent those handbooks at their request out to all the pediatricians in the community, so they sort of had a handbook about the service system. We felt like the document that they created was not just valuable for family members, but for professionals and providers to give them sort of a frame of here's what families see as important.
In a sense, it would be nice if we would, and here's a mandate coming out of my mouth, require you can send a notebook, but then have them send back some statement that says, yes, they actually now understand how the system works.
I'll get you, Representative Gelser, and over here, too. But I would hope if there are any other people from mental health communities in different counties. I've worked in Multnomah County and Clackamas County. I've never seen anything this complete, and I would hope that other counties would look at this and could make their own version of this. This is a great program. Representative Gelser, and then who else was down here? Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was along the same line. I wanted to thank you for bringing a copy of the notebook. And just to compliment Benton County Mental Health, Benton County Developmental Disabilities, the Benton County Health Department, I think has done an exceptional job across the board in all of your services of really bringing consumers in and giving them a voice in the process and really creating grassroots family and consumer-driven services. I think one of the reasons this notebook works so well is that it wasn't created by the people at the Benton County Health Department. This was created by families and consumers. It makes sense to those who would use it because it's created by those who have used it. So I really would encourage others to look at some of the practices in Benton County and the way that you really have been able to empower your consumers and provide some pretty significant family support. And I'm very proud to see this coming out of my legislative district.
Thank you.
And just for the record, Representative Gelser, this program is in her district, so that's for the public that's listening.
Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Welcome. It's good to see you again.
Yes, good to see you.
For the record, I was a Lincoln County Commissioner when we first formed the Accountable Behavioral Health Association, or the ABHA that Mitch is describing. And I think that's important to note in the sense that it's easy to get confused between the local mental health authority and the MHOs in particularly the multi-county areas. And I was particularly taken when the question came out around Clackamas County, and I think it's important that we appreciate that for the smaller, particularly rural counties, it's difficult to provide the array of services and sharing of information without some grouping together of our combined capabilities. It does not take away the responsibility for the local mental health authority from each of the counties, but the joining of resources, and certainly with Benton County's excellent assistance, it's been a real opportunity of growth for the array of offerings in the other counties that are associated. And it's a strange alignment between Lincoln, Benton, Deschutes, Crook, and Jefferson, if you think about the state and where that goes. And it started out as a more of a philosophical gathering together, I think, in terms of the way we wanted to deliver services. And these kinds of efforts have been a real boon to all of the counties. The challenge, then, continues to be the ability to deliver service in our rural counties because of the amount of resources that are there. So it's important to note, and what I wanted to get on the record, is the efforts, the growth, the challenges that many counties have attacked through some really creative methodologies of bringing our work together and with some exceptional people like Mitch who have been at the helm. But the need continues to be able then to provide the services that we all recognize are needed. And I didn't have a question. I just had to throw that in. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cowan. Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, one program
thank you
that we're looking at that the state has is a network of care. It's the networkofcare.org, I believe. And are you familiar with that? And if you are, is this in that program? Because we're looking at spending money on that program, and if this is redundant, then where do we want to put our resources?
Chair Monis Anderson, Chair Tomei, Representative Maurer. No, this is not in the network of care. Now, Lincoln County is one of the counties in our region who has adopted network of care and has the internet site available. We have looked some at it, but have not adopted it in Benton County. We chose instead at this point to go with the handbook. That's what the parents wanted to do. Across the state, I think different counties have looked at and are adopting network of care kind of individually. There's not been a statewide move on the mental health side to adopt that. The Mental Health Directors Association has looked at it and is working with them to adopt parts of that, in particular around a training program for mental health practitioners, so that they're all networked together and do that. So I think we'll see those kind of technologies come along, and we're aware of them. But I think, again, local entities are making decisions about what they can and can't afford about moving into things like network of care.
I just want to announce that we need to be leaving in about 8 minutes. We have a hearing in room D.
But the Senate will keep going, yes, with this agenda. All right, any other questions? Yeah, I am concerned regarding some counties saying we just can't do this and have given up their mental health authority. And, I mean, I've said that I don't know if that's actually happened, but they're saying they want to do that because there just isn't an adequate and enough of funds to support what their mission should really be. So that's Senator Carter's committee's, you know, problem to be creative with the monies, but I would hope that the counties would be creative with how they can support them also. Okay, thank you very much. No other questions?
I just wanted to say to you, yes. Representative Tomei, I'm being intimidated by one of your members, second to your right.
Oh, it's very intimidating.
You appreciate what I have to put up with.
I do appreciate it.
Do we need to take care of him?
Okay, thank you very much. Scott Johnson is Mental Health Director for Deschutes County. And that did take 20 minutes, by the way.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Scott Johnson. I'm the director of Deschutes County Mental Health. And with me today is Dr. Robin Henderson from Cascade Healthcare Community, our regional hospital in Central Oregon. I'm also here as a member of the Oregon State Hospital Community Services Work Group. I believe you have a report available to you today, and we'll be referring to that throughout our remarks. I'm also a member of the Central and Eastern Oregon Work Group connected with the Oregon State Hospital Project. So, as you might imagine, we are very engaged in the discussion around the Oregon State Hospital Master Plan and essential ingredients that need to be available at the community level. We are in support of the State Hospital Master Plan, and we commend the legislature and Governor Kulongoski for their leadership in a redesign of the state hospital system and an improvement in the community system. We're committed to a collaborative community effort, and we enjoy a close working relationship with our area hospital, our adjoining counties, our public safety councils, other private agencies, consumers, and NAMI of Central Oregon. And one of the things to emphasize here that you'll hear as a theme throughout our remarks is the regional emphasis we are placing in much of our work. It's absolutely essential in Central Oregon that we operate that way, and that is a key to our success and to our future. At the same time, we face great challenges that make this work very difficult. First and foremost is our population increase in Central Oregon. At the time the 2000 census was done, for example, we had 115,000 residents in Deschutes County. At the close of this next biennium, we will have about 185,000 residents. We grow about 1,000 people each month. And as you might imagine, that brings some inherent difficulties for our helping agencies. Our county jail is under extreme stress with an increasing number of people with mental illness and addictions incarcerated and in need of help. That having been said, we're doing a number of things we consider progressive and very positive for our community. I want to talk a little bit about a process we've gone through and then refer to Dr. Henderson to tell you about the findings and the recommendations from that process. We were approached last summer by Bob Nickel to assist the Addictions and Mental Health Division and the Siting Committee in considering really what were the needs in Central and Eastern Oregon and how might they be best addressed as this entire process moves forward. We took that process and that project very seriously and entered into a planning process late last summer that was kicked off in Bend in August with legislators, mental health advocates, practitioners, consumers from throughout the eastern part of the state. And we entered into that planning with three goals: to try to reach local consensus on ways we could improve our services and system, second, to create a product that will inform the legislature, the governor, and the Department of Human Services, and third, to describe critical investments that we needed to pursue moving forward. We conducted a process over a period of 3 or 4 months that included analysis of a considerable amount of data, work with staff from the Association of Community Mental Health Programs. They assisted us by designing a survey and sending it out throughout Central Oregon. We got 77 responses to that survey, and that was very informative in terms of how people perceive the system and what improvements would be needed in that. Out of that, we did 2 work sessions and completed a report that is actually an appendix to the State Hospital Community Services report. And in its entirety, it describes sort of where we are and where we need to be going. The final thing I would say about that report is that it's been widely endorsed throughout Central Oregon. Again, our intention was to reach some consensus on where we needed to go. We presented that report in draft form to the Central Oregon legislators in December, provided it to the Community Services Work Group in January, and again, it is now part of the published report on March 13th. The report's been endorsed by Cascade Healthcare Community Board of Directors, the Crook County Court, Deschutes County Board of Commissioners, NAMI of Central Oregon, Housing Works, which is our Central Oregon Housing Authority, and also the County Mental Health Alcohol and Drug Advisory Boards throughout Central Oregon. And again, it is now part of the published report. With that, I'll turn this over to Dr. Henderson, and she will describe to you the findings and the recommendations in the report.
Thank you. You know, before you start, I don't want to interrupt you while we move out, so I think I'm going to move my committee to Hearing Room D, isn't it? Hearing Room D. And so we will take a recess for the health the House Committee on Human Services and Women's Wellness, and I apologize for leaving in the middle of this, but maybe we can hear more from you later and thank you for the material. And shall we, Andy, shall we take our little things here? You'll get them. Okay. Sorry.
Thank you.
Sorry, committee.
We're on deadlines here.
Sorry.
Thank you. My name is Dr. Robin Henderson. I'm Director of Behavioral Health Services at St. Charles Medical Center, which is part of Cascade Healthcare Community in Bend, Oregon. And I come to you today to talk about the findings and recommendations from the Central Oregon process that we went through. I am a member of the Community Services Work Group, a member of the Central and Eastern Oregon Work Group for the State Hospital, a member of the Community Mental Health Coalition, and also, among other things, a member of the Governing Council for Psychiatry and Substance Abuse for the American Hospital Association. Central, as in my role as Director of Behavioral Health, I was recruited to St. Charles 6 years ago to open what is the first acute psychiatric unit east of the Cascades. In this very large community, we had nothing. And it was through the power of the coalition of the community that we were able to develop a 15-bed acute unit through this partnership that leveraged over $12 million in federal and private funds to build a 15-bed psychiatric unit, 14 units of transitional housing, and 5 different either currently built or in process building permanent housing projects for the mentally ill and addicted folks in Central Oregon. We are very proud of that effort, and it's a testament to the relationship between our counties and our hospitals, which I wish I could say existed everywhere across this state. In our findings, we found that the state hospital master plan recommendations were very seriously flawed without community investment over the next 6 years. We won't be possible for us to have the facilities as we are, as they're built, and support them in Central Oregon unless we can come to the point where we build out the system of care and build in the other portions of that system. A regional approach is essential to complement this. We can't do this county by county, like what Mitch said. We have to use the power and support of our regions to make this work. Current county systems are fragile, and very limited access makes services difficult to provide. Our plans have to include improvements in the communities throughout Central Oregon, not only with mental health, but in the hospitals programs, the housing authorities programs, and everybody else that we interconnect with. Growth in Central Oregon is extraordinarily, and its dramatic increase is very hard for all of us to keep up with. When you look at when we started the process to build Sageview 6 years ago, we were looking at maybe a service of less than 400 people per year. 400 people, why would I build a 15-bed unit? Because we looked at our population projections, and now we run pretty consistently full much of the time. The disparity in need-based funding is striking and particularly problematic in Central Oregon. When you look across the service lines for funding in service elements 20, 22, 24, and 25, you'll see that we fall at the bottom or very close to the bottom in almost every area. And that has in part to do with how we fund and don't account for the growth of an area like Central Oregon. Our recommendations that you'll find detailed in the report in Appendix B total $8.46 million for our region just this biennium. And I'll highlight the five primary recommendations that are most important to us at this time. Our most important is to sustain and enhance our core services and adjust for the growth. That will cost $1.15 million. Our services are declining as our growth continues. And I go back to the hospital program that we have. Right now, currently, we provide our services for indigent care on a risk-based model. So our hospital has agreed to take all of the voluntary and involuntary indigent patients who need psychiatric services in Central Oregon for one capitation rate. We obviously lose money on that deal. But even at the rate that we're losing money on that deal, the Central Oregon region will not be able to continue to fund that in 3 years if we don't change our funding model. 2 years or 3 years?
No, two and a half.
Two and a half. That's because you just, yeah, okay. Increased residential and housing options. We need to expand our residential programs. The State Hospital Master Plan calls out very clearly that we are underbuilt for residential programs. And we've done a pretty good job. But $900,000 of that is in development costs that are not in the caseload growth dollars, because we need housing specialists to help us understand what it is that we need to build. And a good example of how this really has impact for us is in our first year of operation at Sageview. There was a young man who had a very, very complex case, and we were trying very hard to keep him in our community and not send him to commitment. The long story short is he stayed over 100 days at the highest, most costly level of care, over 100 days. And didn't need to. This all had to do with we didn't have a step-down resource for him in our community to help him out. Develop respite options to complement the psychiatric emergency services in Sageview at the hospital. There are times when folks do not need acute hospitalization, but because it is the resource we have, that is what we do. That will cost us approximately $200,000 a year. We need to improve our crisis response. We have no mobile crisis. And as you can imagine, providing mobile crisis in a region like Central Oregon presents unique challenges. We are getting ready to go ahead and implement mobile crisis this summer, but that will cost us approximately $300,000 to do so. Ergo, why it is I'm going to run out of money a little bit sooner than I'd like to. But it's important. That's how we can shorten our length of stay in the hospital. And create a robust addiction treatment system. We believe that we need the capacity for dual diagnosis detox. And that will cost us about $1.1 million to develop. Those are our core asks. There's more that are detailed in the report. But these are the things that we need to support the State Hospital Master Plan. And we want to support the State Hospital Master Plan. I would encourage you to take an opportunity to visit Central Oregon and see what we have. Sageview is a beautiful place. We've built a beautiful community of mental health care in the last 5 years that really has sprung up and done rather well. and I would love to have all of you come and see it. Thank you very much.
Questions? Yes, Senator Carter.
Have you evaluated the total master plan, Doctor, in terms of resources?
Yes.
And how much do you see lacking?
Approximately $116
million. And I want you to know that was a very serious question.
Yes.
And the reason I consider it very serious to all of you that are sitting in the audience, I have been working on this issue since 1985. And every psychiatrist I ever talked to, Madam Chair, has said to me, when all of you guys get together and you can put some money in the system, then you see psychiatrists more willing to work in areas of support for these kind of issues. I had a meeting in Multnomah County and had people to meet together from Multnomah County, Clackamas, and Washington counties 3 years ago. We couldn't even get together. And the reason we couldn't get together is because somebody is always stealing somebody else's services. And then when somebody steals somebody else's services, there's a big push to come to the state to say, you're not giving us enough money because you're giving these people this kind of money. Yet when you look at where the masses are in terms of needs and how we usually develop the kind of models that would allow us to pay for these services. But I say that's not the problem. The real problem is that every one of us in this room and families need to have one of the biggest, strongest alliances that you could ever see to talk about new money. Stop fighting over old dollars. We need new money in the system, folk. Unless all of us get together and recognize that right away, everybody is going to be trying to steal somebody else's turf. And that's a natural kind of thing that happens in a society that is built on the kind of economic model that we have in the United States of America. All of us need to be fighting for new dollars. It ain't going to work like we have it right now. Actually, I felt really bad, Madam Chair, because I laughed at the amount of dollars that the governor had in his plan. But quite frankly, the governor is dealing with the limited resources that we have in this state in terms of how we divide the pot. I want everybody out there to get indignant, get angry, go to the churches, go to the synagogues, go to the mosques, go to everybody you know that is a private donor, and seek reasons why we should look at the mental health system as a mockery in this state and this nation, and how we should be trying to get new dollars in it, Doctor. You're going to always be concerned about whether it's 2, 3, or 2.5, thank you, Mr. Director, in terms of the amount of needs of resources that we need. And unless every last one of you get indignant and talk about new money in this system, and you know what? We're trying to use dollars this term that would do beer. And they say, well, we can't do wine because the wine community say this, say that, and they say the other. You know, I don't care. I'm sick of Oregonians not talking about taxes, and some of the very one of you that are sitting out there talking about taxes, every time we want to raise taxes to take care of our infrastructure in this state, are going, oh, but I don't want taxes. Well, how are you going to pay for your core services? How are you going to pay for them if you don't have taxes? You are not going to make it in this system with the same amount of dollars we have in the system. Every one of you be so warned today. Because I know you come in my committee and you're going to hear the same message.
And she's right on. Mm-hmm.
Oh, thank you, absolutely. Senator Carter. Thank you so much. And I appreciate your words very much. I agree with, I am indignant. I looked at that and thought, wow, what can I do as somebody with my experience in mental health in Oregon? What can I do? And I got together with a group of my friends and we looked at if we could have the system we know we need, what would that look like and what would it cost? And you'll see that document in the document that's come from the
Oregon Mental Health Coalition.
Thank you. I couldn't remember what the name was. The Oregon Mental Health Coalition. That's the document where we sat down and said, if we did it right, what would it cost?
You know one of the strongest, Madam Chair? You know one of the strongest lobbyists in this building? Physical health. Where's the lobbyist for behavioral health? Why don't you claim yours?
Yeah.
We can't sit around with the white gloves on anymore and beg for it.
Yeah.
We've got to go out and demand it.
Absolutely. I agree with you.
That's my frustration. I'm sorry.
No,
Thank you.
No apology needed, Senator Carter. I appreciate the heartfelt. And I agree with you.
Any other questions for this panel?
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Couple. What's the deficit of the mental health program in St. Charles relative to the, because we're finding that in most hospitals that have mental health systems, that the deficit is significant. Do you have any idea what it is for St. Charles?
It's well over $1 million and approaching two.
Madam Chair, I could say the same thing for Mercy and Douglas County.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate the report, and other than the fact that Central Oregon is probably growing faster than Southern Oregon, Southern Oregon also is growing relatively fast, and I think we could say the exact same thing for the system in Southern Oregon. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
All right. Thank you very much for coming. I appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Kim Scott from Trillium, Lynn Saxton from Christie Care, and Margaret Pickett, a parent. And then after these three, we have Gina Nickel, and that will conclude our agenda for the day.
Good morning, Chair Anderson and members of the committee. I'm Kim Scott. I'm the Chief Executive Officer for Trillium Family Services, and I'm also the current President of the Oregon Alliance of Children's Programs. And I first want to talk about the Oregon Alliance of Children's Programs. It's a 33-member agency of not-for-profits who work with children and families across a variety of services, mental health, child welfare, runaway and homeless youth, addiction services. We provided about 250 programs last year, and we served over 78,000 children in the state of Oregon across all those different types of services. We're a vital part of the whole service delivery system, and I would in fact say that it would be very difficult for the state to replicate that system of care without us. Despite the fact that last year and just about every year, members of the Alliance, our individual members, through charitable donations, we raise about $20 million a year to continue to support the types of programs that we provide.
Is that public, private, everything?
No, that is through charitable donations.
Charitable.
Annually, the 33 charitable members bring in about $20 million a year. But I want to quote a Trillium board member and an owner of an Oregon business, because I think he does a nice job of identifying what the issue is. It says, the situation has devolved to the point that our contracts with the state are such that we are forced to pay 30% or more below market to our staff. This results in turnover rates that approach 70% on an annual basis. It also creates a situation whereby the state is now being subsidized not only by our charitable donors, as has been the case for years, but now to an even larger extent by our dedicated employees. When I think about that, you know, you're talking about typically bachelor's level people who are going into homes, into communities, into schools, doing some fantastic services in terms of stabilizing mental health crisis. And oftentimes we're paying them $9.50 and $10.50 an hour to do that work. That represents about 70% turnover across this industry annually. And if you're a parent, I'd like you to think about taking your child and how you value that child, and either entrusting them to care in a residential facility, and you see that kind of turnover, the people that oftentimes you meet at the door and you take your child to see for the first time that you hope are going to be working with your child, that's most likely not going to be the same person that you see the next time or the next time, those different types of things, or who's coming into your home to work with your child. With those kind of turnover rates, it's going to be somebody different. What we're specifically asking for is that we would agree with Senator Carter that we need an infusion of new revenue into this system. And we did have a wage study done. We're specifically asking for $11 million. We did have a wage study done a couple years ago by an independent CPA, and that showed that against the Oregon Wage Index, our workforce is paid about 30% under where it should be. We think that the Oregon Alliance of Children's Programs, the providers who provide mental health services, that's about $10 million annually to close that wage gap. Again, the turnover rate is hovering around 70%. We also see that without the allocation of new funds, this is the foundational part of the employees is really the foundational part of what makes the Children's Change Initiative work, what makes community-based services work. And without that type of investment, we see an erosion of care. We ask that the $11 million, which would come from the Oregon Community Mental Health Coalition, that it be invested into the system to fund the needs dedicated to the foundation of the system, the workforce issues that I've identified, and the second half be dedicated to expanding capacity. Furthermore, in this process, we would really like, for future rate setting, we really need to see from the Department of Human Services a more comprehensive and clear methodology for identifying future rates and the true costs associated with these services. I'm going to put on my Trillium Family Services hat for a minute, and I think this is a time for candor when I talk about Trillium Family Services. Currently, this year, you were asking earlier about deficits. You know, we're a $23 million organization. We provide services to children in Central Oregon, in the Mid-Willamette Valley, and in the Portland area. We're currently approaching losses for the year of almost $2 million. So it's a significant, tough time for us. We, like I said, 6,960 children were served across those three regions. 92% of the kids were served in community-based programs, which I think is a really important part of the Children's Change Initiative. That's where we, quote, are investing our services. Excuse me for talking about business principles with the delivery of mental health services, but recently as we did our margin analysis of our programs, those programs that are able to cover their direct costs, of the 11 or 12 service offerings that we do in community-based services, outpatient, in-home, foster care, across all of those regions, we only have, I think, two programs that are close to meeting the direct costs. So there are no margins. These are all programs that are losing. And I think that's significant as we're looking at investing in our future. I also want to just talk a little bit about the economics of this. The truth of the matter is the Children's Change Initiative not only represented a change in the delivery system, it also represented a change in the business. You know, we're no longer insulated from market forces through guaranteed contracts with the state. We're now selling our services to mental health organizations. There are no guarantees in terms of volumes. And so we're in a market-driven system. And what I would like to say, and we're seeing evidence of this right now, is that, yes, we're in a market-driven system. We're impacted by market forces, but so is the state. And the truth of the matter is your rates are not competitive. And moving forward on a capacity basis, as we look at selling that, we're looking at selling it to other payers who can cover the cost of care that will allow us to do what we need to do in terms of our workforce. Last year, our budget, 7% of it was through commercial insurance and private pay. This year, it's 15%, so it's growing. It's small growth, but it's growing. And it is an economic factor that we're going to have to make decisions like that to stay alive so that we continue, in one form or another, to work with Oregon's most vulnerable children. But it's not an easy task. 3 years ago, there was a very Perry Center for Children. You know, we had a labor strike there, very contentious process. And people in the legislature and others talked about the fact this is a moral issue. They're not paying their folks enough. And what I would like to say is it is a moral issue. I believe that. But I also believe the resolution of that can start here. Because at the end of the day, we are all doing the work of the state here in terms of working with these children. And, you know, this is where we get our resources. So I want to continue to highlight that.
So we have about 12 more minutes for three more people.
I'm going to be real quick on this last piece. You do have some data that I gave you on some programs. And what I do want to say is that I think these partnerships can work. I was looking at the we have a side-by-side comparison of what used to be the Children's and Adolescents State Hospital Program, which Trillium runs down at Children's Farm Home Campus. And through, I think, a great partnership with the state and with the other provider community, we've been able to decrease the length of stay from 167 days at the state hospital to 79 days. And what that represents in terms of cost is per episode from $113,000 down to $48,000 per episode. And the outcomes look very encouraging. We're also serving as many kids with considerable less capacity. So I just want to point that out, that as a provider community, we are innovative and we do great work with kids. So that's how I would end today.
I have a question. You have discharge destinations for community mental health youth. I think basically the Oregon State Hospital doesn't have an adolescent ward anymore. Is that correct?
Okay. That's correct. We've replicated that program.
Yeah. I think it's extremely important to have the community mental health programs that take care of people like this. But thank you for this information. Extremely helpful.
Good morning, Madam Chair, and the rest of the committee. My name is Margaret Puckett, and my child has a mental illness. I work as a family advocate for Trillium Family Services, and we're Oregon's largest mental health provider. And my role at Trillium is to support and educate families with other children receiving intensive mental health treatment. My own child received services 11 years ago at the Children's Farm Home in Corvallis. And from this personal experience, I was inspired to start a support group for parents, which I still run. This is after 7 years. And I was a family advocate in Benton County at the local and state level, and I've worked a lot with Mitch Anderson. You've heard testimony in the past, I know, about from other families about how hard it is to get services and how complex our treatment system is for someone that's overwhelmed by their child's needs. But I want to show you a picture of what this looks like, and it's on page 2 of the handout that I gave you. Turn to that. Okay. I just want to see, as you scan the dozens of services used by a Portland family, and then my own family in Corvallis. I'll give you a second to look. I want you to note that each one needed multiple appointments and meetings. Each needed new separate forms to complete. Each required faxes and copies of other documents, such as medical and insurance records, waivers for the release of records, and letters from doctors and clinicians. That's when they can get around to it. And I want you to look at how diverse these organizations are. We have schools, police, counselors, support groups, hospitals, insurance companies, shelters, attorneys, and many other agencies, nonprofit and governmental agencies. Now, if our child had a serious medical condition, such as leukemia or cancer, would we be talking to all these people? Now, I mentioned serious childhood illnesses like leukemia and cancer because I want to show that our children's disorders are often more fatal than these devastating illnesses. And so I have on page 3 of this handout data from the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta and the National Institute of Mental Health in Washington, D.C. And you can see clearly that mortality rates for childhood mental illnesses are 3 to 4 times the rates for childhood leukemia and cancer. Now, knowing this as parents and sensing our child's extreme vulnerabilities, I was constantly concerned about suicide. We can't understand why it is so difficult to get the help we needed. Last of all, most parents are quite capable of managing if they get help. And I'm speaking now as a staff person for a mental health provider. Most children we treat have disorders that are biological or genetic, and they're not the result of abuse or neglect. And I'd say from my experience with parents, the vast majority, and I estimate about 80%, the children are discharged back to their home because that's the best place for them. And again, there is research showing that community-based and in-home work with the family and child is more successful and cheaper in the long run, than residential care. Now, we have the expertise and experience. We see treatment work as it did for my child, and we know that early and consistent treatment results in a better long-term outcome for the child. But mental health recovery, and this is a brain thing, is slow very slow. And so it means our families need treatment and support over the long term once the child is discharged. They're in residential care if they are serious, like my child, for a short period of time. But we need it for a number of years. Now, I'm one of those 80% of families. I needed those supports until my child turned 18, and as it turns out, I needed them after that, even when adult services kicked in. All I wanted is for her to reach adulthood with the skills to manage, or as another mother put it, we don't need the government to save us. We just want them to help us keep them off the streets when they grow up. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for all of the, what you've done for so many families other than your own. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Monis Anderson, Senator Gordley, Senator Carter, I'm Lynn Saxton. I'm the executive director of Christie Care. We are a 148-year-old agency in Oregon, making us about the same age as the state. We've been serving children and families since pioneer times. We serve all 36 counties in Oregon, and we've been providing mental health services throughout the state through a combination of state funding and private funding for decades. I'm here today to make things short and sweet. There are three critical pieces of information to take away from this hearing. First of all, the private not-for-profit system is in crisis. To say anything else would be disingenuous. Every year, the private not-for-profit system is leveraged by $20 million of private investment. That private investment last year opened community-based services that were never able to be provided in Lincoln County before because there simply was not any private investment. When Christie Care learned of the need, we went out, we got a private grant, and we did it based on using evidence-based practices and getting results for children and families. Now we find ourselves with our administrative overhead at 9%, which is very low by any standard, with the highest starting wage among our peer group, with evidence-based practices and quality services that are held accountable to approximately 14 levels of regulation, we find that private investment at risk. And what that means, quite simply, is children and families, first and foremost, throughout the state, will not get what they need in the community. Because these days, when donors make investments, they make investments on the return that you can achieve with those dollars. There isn't one nonprofit in Oregon that walks into the six largest foundations in this state and doesn't have to provide results and accountability. That accountability is at risk. Our turnover rate for the last quarter was 41%. We simply cannot do this job, and as a result, if we cannot do this job, this investment will go to other states. There's nothing that requires it to go to Oregon. There's nothing that makes this money stay within the boundaries of Oregon. That would be a tragedy for the acutely mentally ill children and families all across this state. We simply must ask your consideration for addressing a wage gap that is over 35%, and I want to underscore that the wage gap does not include retirement benefits, nor does it include health care benefits. If you add those benefits, the wage gap probably goes to somewhere between 60 and 70%. It is unconscionable. My board of directors has made a private investment in making sure that our employees are compensated in the way they are, and we have been able to sustain private investment in the face of incredible odds. We will not be able to do that going forward. Please help us. Please help us, children, help children and families in Oregon. Please help us continue to bring this money to the state. Without your help, we cannot do it any longer.
Where do these people go? I mean, if you say the turnover is so high, is it a training ground to
who? We frankly train most state employees and county government employees. Mm-hmm. That is what we do. That's our second service to the state of Oregon.
So is there I don't know all of the public places that would hire these. So
the MHOs, the MHAs, the county government. We employ social workers. I have over 205 social workers and therapists that work for me, three psychiatrists, five nurses. We compete. It's very difficult to hire in the medical community, as you know, Senator Monis Anderson. It's a very competitive environment, and we also compete on a daily basis with state, county, and local governments.
Madam Chair?
Yes?
And I hate to, you know, be sounding the clarion scary call all the time. And it's one thing to look at the not-for-profits to be in trouble, but when, I mean the non-profits, but when you see the not-for-profits in trouble like this, there's no way, it's equivalent to our schools, there's no way that if we didn't have private people in our state doing the kind of work that Christie schools are doing, there's no way the state could pay for the kind of services that we need to pay for. And so this tells me that we're in crisis in terms of this issue, because when the private non-for-profits come to the table, they don't usually come because they don't want to be bothered all the red tape of government, and I understand that, and that makes sense. But when they're in trouble, and along with our non-profits, we're in crisis. And I just want to say this because I don't think that we're saying it enough. Leonard, it'd be so nice if you could go to the editorial boards and start sounding the alarm, because it's going to get worse before it gets better. And maybe the nonprofits need to be calling you up, because if you are in trouble, that means they're in double trouble, to see if we can get this message out, because, again, we're going to need an infusion of revenue in order to do what we need to do along these lines. There's no doubt. And I think the gravy train in Oregon has come to a screeching thought. We've used every one-time bowl, a pot of money that we have in this state, and we have no choice but to be able to raise revenue to pay for our critical core infrastructure services in the state. Thank you for coming.
Thank you very, very much.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Gordon.
Thank you very much for Ms. Saxton. Are you aware of the revenue proposal that's been put forth by four senators, Westland, Deckert, Schrader, and Morse?
No.
May I?
Is it a mental health bill?
No. This is a proposal, and it picks up on the comments being made by my good colleague, Senator Actually, Carter. Their proposal is focused on revenue reform or tax reform, recognizing that everything that's already been said about the deficiency of our revenue gathering system as we know it, a system that was framed in the 20th century for 20th century needs. And what I want to invite you to do is go online to one of those senators' websites, download that proposal, please become familiar with it, invite the senators to come and present to your organization and any other organizations that you're a part of. The only way we're going to get past where we are, and Senator Carter has said it wonderfully this morning, is to get a focus on revenue reform.
I appreciate that, and I absolutely understand the need for Oregonians to address tax reform for some time. My concern is by the time that time comes for all of us as citizens of this state, we will have lost a significant portion of the private investment in the system.
And my suggestion is to say that, and I'm hearing you, while we're doing this work and while we're paying attention to what you have put forward to us today to understand, we also need to be working on the other piece.
Absolutely.
And we need your help getting that information and that proposal out there before more Oregonians and before more organizations who can help bring more pressure on this legislative body to do what it should do.
Absolutely. It's a team effort, Senator Gordley, and I'm happy to help in any way I can.
Thank you. And we make that request to everyone present to become familiar with the four senators' proposal. Mm-hmm.
Because what would be devastating is for the legislature, as we have done before, pass legislation, and then it's referred and defeated by the public. And so this is, even though we can be strongly supportive of it, we have to make sure that the public is going to be supportive of this.
Anyway, thank you very much, and we are past time. Ms. Nickel, would you please work with Shannon to see how we can incorporate your testimony in on Wednesdays? And I know we have a huge agenda for Wednesday and a lot of people's schedules, and it's too bad that we can't maybe have fewer people testifying on Wednesday so that we can get into the in-depth conversations that we've been able to do today. Would that be all right? Oh, we do? Oh, we have caucus though at 10:15.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah.
I can start early.
Yeah. How much time do you need, Gina?
I can give you your message in 2 minutes.
Oh.
Can we start earlier on Wednesday?
Yeah. It's too late.
Oh,
Gina.
Chair Monis Anderson, committee members, for the record, my name is Gina Nickel. I'm the executive director of the Association of Community Mental Health Programs. Everybody you see out here, most everybody's left, but the people that were out here, we are a public-private partnership. And I will be around because obviously we don't have enough time here, but I'll be around to see each one of you and talk further. My message is that we're going to hear from a lot of people on Wednesday, but that is not nearly enough time to talk about the community services work group, which we must do. That calls for $100 million, a biennium in the next four biennium. We have to talk about that. Senator Carter used the word indignant. I don't even have words. I am almost out of air looking at what the system really needs to focus. We haven't even begun to talk about the Children's System Change Initiative and how our partners are hurting. I'm fearful that we're about ready to shut our children's system down. I have people saying in a year we're not going to be able to make budget. That's both in the public and the private sector. We have got to have a very, very serious discussion. We have places in Eastern Oregon looking at shutting down. We have other places that just don't know how they can make ends meet. So for the sake of our children's and our adult mental health system, we have to have more serious discussion. Wednesday won't cover it.
And I think that after Wednesday that I would like to meet with a few people to sort of take what we have and then look, because we are not opposed to having evening or early morning meetings to cover this, because right now I am scheduled through
April 30th
with just Senate bills. Just Senate bills. Well, we have some House bills, I guess.
No, I didn't schedule any.
Oh, no House bills scheduled. So that's why we, and this is so important that I think that we need to look at another time to have this further discussion on mental health.
Senators, you have a full team willing to do anything you'd like to get the message out.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay.
With that, the meeting's adjourned.